I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a pallet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, fit. But I burst out laughing watching him.
So it's just me and you today, Lee. Poor Niall rang me from Nina Hospital yesterday after Laura were beaten in the championship. So not only was he beaten in the championship, he rings me from hospital. He ruptured his AC. His AC joint in your shoulder? He did his shoulder anyways. That's basically it. So he has to go for an MRI scan. Absolutely nothing worse. My heart went out to him yesterday, Lee. Like, I mean, you go championship morning, you're looking forward to the game. You know, you're looking forward to the night out after. Let's be honest, it's club hurling or club football, and you end up in dirty gear sitting in a hospital waiting on an X-ray, thinking, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah, no, it's every player's worst nightmare, isn't it? Last week on the show, we were talking about ACLs and rupturing your knee and stuff. So as soon as you texted me last night to say that he was injured, I feared the worst. I thought we jinxed him, and it was really bad. Now his shoulder, that's not a nice one either, and he's a journalist, and it's his typing shoulder, so he'll maybe get out of work for a little while is the only bright side for him. But no, if, you know, when it rains, it pours, and like to lose out in the rain, you know, with the injury, you're in A&E, and everyone else is maybe drowning their sorrows, and I'm pretty sure that's his season probably ended.
Yeah, well, he's getting the MRI. I want to see the results of this MRI because he could be making a bigger deal out of this than, you know, I don't know what Niall's like with injuries. He could be making a bigger deal out of it. Well, I'll study the MRI and we'll be able to make a decision on Niall's fitness. He might be back on Thursday. He can't drive. He's going to get the bus up. Anyways, the match is on television yesterday. Briefly, a handy win at home to Nagel. There's not too much to say on this match. Jeez, it was, you know, it's a first round club match. No huge intensity. An easy win for Briefly. The interesting part really about yesterday was Aidan O'Shea and Rob Hennelly were interviewed after the game on TG Catter, and first of all you'd probably say fair play to both of them for showing their faces in front of the cameras, because a lot of people would probably just have said, here, look, get someone else to do it, I'm okay, I'm going to keep the head down, but they didn't. Aidan O'Shea was asked a very stupid question, I have to say, by Micheál O'Donnell, and I don't want to, Micheál O'Donnell doesn't usually ask silly questions like that, but Jesus, here's the question he asked. Like, Micheál O'Donnell know anything about the internal politics of club football? He said, the county boys would be excused if you decided you weren't ready. Was there a question you weren't going to start today? He was talking about the four county boys. Like, I mean, under what circumstances can a county player come back after the county season and say, sorry lads, to the club lads, I'm not quite ready for this first round match? Like, I mean, there'd be absolute war.
No, absolutely. I mean, apart from injury, obviously, there is no, under no circumstances, because like from the club's perspective, you know, they're waiting really patiently on you coming back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure a lot of county players miss the league and things like that. So they're eyeing up their championship date. They have it early. They're trying to prep and make preparations, and you're maybe not there training and you're not there in the matches. So no, they're going to be thrown in the deep end straight away, to be fair to them. And I bet they want to be as well. Like, I'm sure, I can't imagine Aidan O'Shea saying, no, I'm still tired from a couple of weeks ago or whatever. I reckon, especially because Mayo lost, you know, they want to get out there, get a win, get the feel of a football again and feel like normal again, you know, after such a hard defeat to take.
Yeah, exactly. In fairness to Micheál, Aidan O'Shea and Matthew Rann, they weren't picked to start. They were, there was a bit of messing going on with the team. So maybe this is where the kind of question, but trust me, Micheál, no county player will ever say they're too tired to go back into the club. Aidan O'Shea actually confirmed what we were saying last Thursday, Lee, that he went off the grid for 2 weeks. That's what we were saying. Like, I mean, this whole hullabaloo and a lot of crying in Mayo from the county board, oh, leave our players alone. Players just played an All-Ireland final. What a few muppets online are saying about them, I think, is so far down their list of priorities. And Aidan O'Shea obviously confirmed it. He said, I've been off the grid for the last couple of weeks. When you lose, everything's wrong. When you win, everything is right. And, you know, he's mature enough to, you know, not get too sidetracked by his name trending, you know, from a load of people sitting in front of their computers while he's out, you know, with his teammates, you know, in a pub somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, he also went on to say that, like, whether they win or lose, you know, it makes a little difference to him, you know, what people are saying in the media and things like that. But no, it does. It confirms everything we said, like, and it just confirms, like, the type of character he is. And it sort of made me think maybe one of the reasons why he gets such a hard time and why media, some pundits in particular, just can't warm to him is because he never raises to it. You know, he'll never retweet someone on Twitter and give it back or go back to the media and say such and such is so wrong and I am a good player and all. You know, he just takes it. Or, well, he doesn't take it, he just ignores it and focuses on himself and goes on. And it's really infuriating when you're behind a keyboard arguing with yourself, you know?
Yeah. No, it's true. That's true. He just doesn't rise to it at all. Rob Hennelly was interviewed then, and I have to pick a few holes in this interview from Rob. Number one, he watched the match back twice, which I thought was an incredible thing already that he's been back watching it. He said this week, or he was talking about getting over the loss or whatever. He says the first week is a bit of a blur. You're just trying to avoid people a little bit. This week I watched the game back a couple of times, took a few learnings from it. We just have to take the positives from it. Now, I'm sorry, Rob, but you're not going to take the positives from that All-Ireland final. You have to take the negatives from that All-Ireland final and learn from the negatives. There's so much. You won't learn if you're just going to take positives from that All-Ireland final. That is not an All-Ireland final that too many positives came out of. I'm surprised. Like, I understand people who are just positive and, you know, any negative, you know, this kind of thing. I want to block out the negativity and focus on the positives. But there comes a point where, you know, Jesus, you have to look at what went wrong in that final. You have to learn, why did this happen? And if they're just looking for positives out of losses, how will they ever learn?
Yeah, I mean, doing my very best to avoid a cliche here, but like, you do learn more from losing than you do from winning. I mean, that's just a fact, because there's more to improve on. So that's definitely, he needs to be a lot more logical in his analysis of it. And I did think it was surprising that he'd watched it twice. That must have been a hard watch. And then to go back and do it to yourself again, you know, that second time, to be fair. Maybe it took two times before he found that many positives, you know, because the first time he didn't get enough. But no, like, you're absolutely right. You've got to be really critical. I think it's too soon as well. I mean, Mayo fans don't want to hear that. I don't think they want to hear that you're in any way happy with that. You know, it was a hard defeat to take, and it's supposed to be a hard defeat to take. And so you just, you know, fans expect you just to get on with it. But they want to, I feel like fans, they want to know that you're hurt as well. You know, we're hurting and you're hurting and we're in this together kind of thing. I don't know if they'd be too thrilled to hear that, like, oh, there was positives to take from it and it's all well and good.
Well, that's it. And then he went on and almost spoke directly to Mayo fans. And he says, if I was talking to Mayo supporters, I'd say we're very lucky. We're in a privileged position in Mayo and we should probably appreciate that a bit more. And broadly, I would agree with that. Like, most counties would love to be in Mayo's situation, like thrilling wins, getting to the end of the season pretty much every year for the last 10 years in massively exciting games, roller coaster ride for their supporters. So in general, I would agree with Rob that Mayo supporters should appreciate what that team gives them. And I think they do. Like, I mean, Jesus, Mayo fans are very appreciative of the team. They're very proud of their team. But, like, I mean, this is 2 weeks after losing an All-Ireland that they should have won. A lot of Mayo fans are pissed off, Lee. And they're right to be pissed off. And it's going to take more than 2 weeks for them to start going, oh, well, I appreciate everything. They were favoured. This is the one they really had to win, as far as I'm concerned. And they didn't win it. And telling Mayo fans that they need to appreciate the fact that they get the finals and let them down, you know, I don't think he's reading the room too well. And again, Rob Hennelly, it's not against Rob at all. He seems like a very outgoing and clearly a very positive person. And that's fine. I'm more of a glass half empty type of person. And that's fine as well. But he's not reading the room, I don't think. And I think Mayo fans will need a lot longer before they start being able to look, you know, broadly at what that, you know, what the team is giving them.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to have to pull you on the Mayo should have won just as a Tyrone fan. you know, we were pretty fairly confident.
Well,
they
were favourite.
But I do understand, completely. And, you know, they'd never played Tyrone in a final, so there was no baggage there.
Yeah.
As there was against, all the Dublin losses and things. They'd finally got over the line against Dublin. It just took that last little push against Tyrone, who, they've been very successful against in recent years in semi-finals and quarter-finals. But I do agree with Robbie, he is correct. It's just the timing that seems off more than anything. I always remember Mickey Hart saying, because a journalist had put it to him about Mayo's lack of success, and he said, that's down to your perspective. I would say Mayo are an incredibly successful team, one of the most successful counties about, you know, because they win, they only lose one game a year typically, and it just happens to be the final, which is hard to take. But yeah, there's a time and a place. Maybe he was one of the ones that was subjected to the abuse, and he's taken it a little bit more harshly than the other ones, and he really wanted to get it off his chest, and he's talking to someone in particular or something in particular that maybe I've missed. You don't really know, but the timing definitely seems strange. I just think, you know, especially because his club just got a win. You know, he really could have just spinned every question back to look, we're here now. That was a disappointment in the past, but I'm all about the club and I'm all about moving forward. And we'll talk, you know, get into Mayo again next year.
I think it was Joe Brolly. Joe Brolly always makes these points about Mayo, but it's something I'm starting to, you know, think about a little bit more is the psyche in Mayo. And win or lose, those players are heroes. And let's be positive about this team, even if they lose in All-Ireland. And I think that was the case because they were coming up against the arguably the best team of all time. And they put it up to Dublin heroically. But, I suppose, when you're a player and you lose an All-Ireland final that you deserve, that you are going in as favourites to, it was a 50-50 game, we were saying on the show. But you kind of deserve a backlash for a couple of months. Like the Kerry lads lost to Tyrone. They're being absolutely savage down in Kerry. And you don't see the Kerry County Board releasing statements saying, leave these players alone. No, they're the standards. So, when the attitude in Mayo is, oh, we'll back these lads no matter what, no matter how they let us down. Do players feel accountability? And this is the one time that they have gotten, not all supporters, but some supporters have turned against them. And the Mayo County Board's releasing a statement like they're not even capable of you know, riding out this criticism for a little while. Do you know what I mean? I think, I don't know. I think a bit of a backlash in your own county for a loss, a disappointing loss, is absolutely no harm on the players.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be expecting it as well. It's not their first loss, as you say, but there definitely was that whole, Dublin kind of saved them a little bit in terms of their reputation, because they were up against this Dublin and all the money and the six in a row. And sure, no one was going to beat them. If this was any other era or decade, Mayo would have two or three All-Irelands with this team. But the fact of the matter is they don't, you know, they didn't get over the line. And then they got this one opportunity, the over the line against Dublin, up against the Tyrone team who haven't been in a final since 2018. New management and all the rest of it. You know, there was loads of opportunities to try to seize when it came to that match, and they just didn't. They did fail. And this time, this is probably the worst failure in all of their All-Irelands, going back 2000 and with the Donegal game. Maybe it was just another sort of a similar situation, but that had come up against a very difficult style of football that was kind of unprecedented at the time. So yeah, I do. I think, I mean, it depends what criticism. We can't sit and say that they deserve all this criticism, and then someone sends us this awful tweet about people's families and stuff. But I know what you mean in terms of backlash. People need to react. They need to say, no, that wasn't good enough. I do expect more from my county and these players. And I expect them to take these opportunities because we've entrusted these players with it, with this job. and they ultimately failed.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing I hated more when I'd lose a game that you'd be expected to win is to be plumb asked and to be told, you know, well done. Like, you'd shrug away from someone saying well done. You'd be just so kind of disappointed. Another club result, a few more club results here that are interesting. Ballymun only drew with Skerries, which is a very interesting result. It's only group stages in Dublin as well, so you don't have to read a huge amount into it. But Ballymun were without Dean Rock, John Small, Evan Comerford, Philly McMahon and Paddy Small. And they're all injured, would you believe, which is a weird one. Dean Rock will be back next week and Paddy Small. We're talking about Micheál O'Donnell's question about the club players, you know, taking a rest to come back to the club. That's not the case here, despite it being a very long list of inter-county players. Another interesting one in Dublin was Kilmacud beat St Vincent's. And it's not that interesting in itself. Vincent's are on the slide, as we know. Still depending on Mossy Quinn, right? So Mossy Quinn scored 1-4 out of 2-7. The final score was 115-27. I think Kilmacud won by 5 points in the end. Mossy's 40. Lee, like, I mean, to be 40 years of age and to be scoring 1-4 out of 2-7, more than half your size total. I know he's on the frees, but he scored 1-1 from play, and one of his frees, he won that free himself. So he's getting 1-2 from play, kind of, at 40 years of age in Dublin club football, which is a very, very high standard of football. It's phenomenal achievement, really.
Well, it's testament to Mossy and his determination and resilience and his athleticism as well. He must really look after himself in terms of diet and and conditioning and stuff. But it's not a good sign for his club, that's for sure.
No.
I mean, like, when you're that reliant on, because how long have they been reliant on him now? I mean, it's like you're spanning like 3 decades more, probably. I'm sure he broke onto the team quite young. Definitely not a good look on their behalf. But I mean, like, these older players, they're all making comebacks. You've got the boots back on yourself, so who knows? Are you going to do a Mossy Quinn next season?
Yeah, I think the thing about Mossy Quinn was Mossy Quinn was never fast. Mossy Quinn used his accuracy and his brain, and, you know, the fact he's slowing down a bit probably doesn't affect his game an awful lot. My game was 90% based on speed and being elusive and hard to mark. Now I'm not fast anymore, so I'm basically left with nothing. I'm a junior B player for that reason, that when you lose your pace and your whole, you know, strength was pace and kind of trickery and fitness, well, you're pretty much a shit junior B player then, and that's it. So, like, I mean, I just have to live with that. Another one was Owen Kelly, who scored 12 points for Mullinahone. He's 39. He got 8 from play and 4 frees. They beat Tumivara at the weekend. I just find it incredible that these fellas, again, Owen Kelly, like, accuracy. These fellas who are just lethal accurate, you know, can stay playing because you'll just stand out of a crowd and, you know, get a pop pass or whatever maybe and stick it over the bar. So, you know, one player in that Kilmacud Crokes game that, you know, he's pretty accurate, but he relies on speed as well, as Paul Mannion. He got 8 points. 3 from play, a few spectacular ones as well, by all accounts. Like, I don't know what Desi Farrell is going to do to get him back, because I think Desi Farrell is the reason that Paul Mannion isn't in there. So other than asking some Kilmacud Crokes selector to come in on board and try to get in to back in with Paul Mannion that way, I'm not sure how Desi can get Paul Mannion back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know the ins and outs, or if there was like an official fallout and stuff. I know he wasn't in favour with Desi Farrell in terms of starting, but you really notice the difference this year in terms of their substitutes and stuff. You know, like last in 2020, if you subbed off Dean Rock, you were bringing on a player who was nearly as good, which was just absolutely insane to think. How could you sort of go wrong? But it was definitely, it sort of exposed them a little bit this year with them players leaving. And Paul Mannion being so young in the prime of his career, like, they just need him back. I don't know. Do you think maybe, now that he's seen the whole Dublin setup, and it would be a big deal again for Dublin to come back and actually win the All-Ireland, you know, we talked a little bit like monotonous, and it could get a bit boring maybe, the same training and trying to achieve this goal. Now they're maybe not the favourites. They probably will be favourites, but, you know, in terms of standing, they're not the reigning champion. So maybe that alone would be the allure for Paul Mannion to come back.
Yeah, it might. It might, kind of redemption. But, like, I mean, I'd say Paul Mannion's just like, I'm not enjoying it if I'm not starting. I don't think Paul Mannion's the type of fella who's happy just to run in for the last 15 minutes. Like you said, he's in his prime. And for me, after David Clifford, he's the best number 13 in the country. So it's outrageous that he's not starting for Dublin. So for that reason, I'm not sure he'll go back in under Desi, unless, I don't know, I'm only guessing. I could be completely wrong on him being pissed off being a sub. We know subs' attitudes is different to when I played. But I don't know. Him walking away, I don't know. Maybe Desi just needs to, well, he needs to ring him, obviously, and maybe he needs to promise him a start. And that's it. Paddy Small is out on the wing now anyway. So, like, I mean, there is that 13 jersey. Costello's not a natural in that corner. So, like, that 13 jersey is there for him. If I was Desi, I'd be doing anything it takes to get him back. Talking about older players playing well, it was Martin Shovlin. This was last week. He played last week in the Championship. He came on as a sub in an intermediate match at 60 years of age. Absolutely incredible stuff. He's a little bit, it's a little bit before your time, Lee, Martin Shovlin. He's 61. He's 61 now. In Waterford, Mount Sion nearly beat Ballygunner. They lost by 2 points. Interesting here, there was a point between them in injury time. Mount Sion, there was Ballygunner were leading by a point. Mount Sion were through for a guaranteed point, and Alan Kerwin went for a goal and put it wide. And Ballygunner got another point and put two in it and ended up winning by two. Like, I mean, for me, he takes the right option there, Lee. Like, you're underdogs, you're a point down in injury time. That goal, if that goes in, that game's, you know, the game's over. Whereas if it's a point, it's a draw. Ballygunner still have a chance to beat you anyway. So for me, he took, without having seen it, might see it on TG Cahir tonight, to go for the juggler a point down as an underdog, you pretty much have to do it.
Yeah, you got to go for the juggler, to be fair. Okay, it's a heartbreaking moment too, because, you know, hero and villain, and maybe just a couple of inches is the difference between that, you know. He could have got the point and then it would have been equalised and maybe would have went into more extra time and stuff. But, like, they haven't lost a game or a championship game, at least, or they're the reigning champions in, like, 8 years, the last eight in a row or something. Yeah. So, I mean, you just got a sense. They must have sensed blood, you know, and the opportunity's just there. I mean, they know it's now or never, and you just had to go for it. And it was just so unfortunate that it flashed wide. It failed for him, so I do. But he did go for the right decision, and I hope people don't really blame him for that.
Stephen O'Keefe said it was only about a foot wide. So, like, I mean, that was the winning and losing of the game. It's the first time since 2018. They're going for eight in a row this year. It's the first time since 2018. It was a quarter final with Roan Moore that any team in Waterford came within a score of Ballygunner. Like, I mean, you know, their manager after the game, Darragh Sullivan, says that's the tightest game we've been in a long time. We're delighted we've come out of the right side of it, because it could very easily have panicked. Some of the scores toward the end of the game were very composed. Ballygunner need closer games. The Waterford Championship need closer games. You know, so this is kind of a win-win for everyone. Ballygunner floating through that championship is no good for them in the Munster club. Like, I mean, it's a waste of their time because they're not tested. Like, one team dominating is bad enough, but if they're dominating and winning the games easy, you know, it's just a disastrous championship.
Yeah, because, it completely eliminates even just that, the promise of hope. You know, even like, yeah, they're winning, but God, didn't we get close last year? Maybe if we just fix one or two things here, and you have to, like, use that hope and cling to it and bring it that, you know, to give you the energy to go again next season. But yeah, they were just demolishing teams back and forth. And, you know, it's not the first time. Like, I am always thinking of, like Cross McGlean, I suppose. They're the obvious example. Of a dominant club team in Armagh. They've got like 45 titles and they won God knows how many in a row between the 90s and the 2000s and the noughties. It does make it boring. Like, I mean, for me, even as a neutral in these sort of these counties, and when you're looking up club scores and all, you're not really interested in that because there's nothing going to be surprising anyway at the end of the day. So, and that's for me outside the county, so you can only imagine what it's like coming up against them. Do you think people just celebrate getting to the final because it's nearly the best you can hope for?
Well, it kind of is. Portlaoise won 9 in a row in Laois, then lost the 10 in a row, and then won 3 in a row. So they won like 12 of 13. Look, it is boring even for Portlaoise. Like, look at Dublin in the Leinster Championship. Most Dublin fans wouldn't even be celebrating Leinster titles now. Whereas if some, you know, if another county won a provincial, you know, you could be celebrating for a week after it. It's, you know, it's no good for anybody. And in the case of Laois, nobody really stepped up to Portlaoise's level. Portlaoise aren't winning them now because Portlaoise have come back down, you know. So Port Harlington probably the dominant, going to be the dominant team in Laois now. Sticking with the hurling, talking of Roan Moore, they have reached the county final for the first time in 31 years. They beat Dungarvan. So it's Peter Queeley. He's managed them to the county final. He's managed four different clubs. They're the fourth club he's managed to the county final. So that final's on next weekend. So at least we have a county final to look forward to rather than a first round match on TG Cahir. I was looking at this. in the Kerry Championship, Temple Noah beat Dr. Crokes, which would be a bit of a surprise. They scored two goals in the first 2 minutes, ended up beating them. I was calling this the group of death because it has Temple Noah in it, it has Dr. Crokes in it, it has Kenmare Shamrocks in it, and it has Spa. Well, Spa are only up from intermediate, but they beat Kenmare Shamrocks, which was a big shock. And then I looked at the other group and it has Austin Stacks, Killarney Legion, Dingle and Kearns O'Reilly. So, like, I mean, there's two group of deaths, because in the Club Championship in Kerry, obviously, there's only 8 senior teams, so they're all bloody strong, serious teams. So it makes for a pretty exciting championship. Spa have Darragh Moynihan. They're only up. Like I was saying, that's a huge win for Kenmare Shamrock. It's always interesting with the Kerry Championship when they narrow it down to 8 teams. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. They obviously extended with divisional teams then for another club championship. At least it avoids those early one-sided matches, I suppose, Lee, like other count, like 16, you know, you'll pretty much be able to handpick the top two in the four groups, and then you get to your final, you know, 8. Kerry just start with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a Kerry thing, isn't it? Like, because they're all about the prestige of football and the best be the best, and like they treat it, they're called the kingdom, you know, because you know it's royalty when you're good at football there, and that's where they're at. So they pick this, like, they want the elite of the elite. It must be like Spa winning the intermediate last year. That must be some achievement, because just the amount of teams that are in them lower divisions. So to claim out of them must be really, really difficult. And then just staying in that senior league would be a challenge in itself. But I think that's their first ever senior win. Did I read that somewhere?
Yeah, first time they've ever won at senior. Yeah, they must have been up and going. But Spa winning the intermediate are the 9th best team in Kerry, which means they're probably better than 25 county champions in other counties, you know, wouldn't be far off that. You know, the standard, they've 8 senior teams, 16 intermediate and 16 premier junior teams. Because I was looking at this, I was tweeting about this earlier. David Clifford scored 1-9 as Fossa beat St. Michael's. Foyle Moore, 3-13 to 1-15. He scored 1-9. It was in the junior championship. And I was joking that me and David Clifford play the same level of football. We're both juniors. But, like, I mean, if you've only got 6, if you've only got 8 seniors, 16 intermediate and 16 premier junior, they would be one of the top premier junior. You know, it would be a strong intermediate team probably in another county.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, like, I don't think it's junior football. Like
I play
junior football, you know what I mean? Yeah, like we both play. We're both the same level as David Clifford. No, I mean, it must be so daunting too. Like, if you are one of them lower teams and you're going up, and you know you're up against Paddy Clifford and David Clifford, like, that must be, you know, like maybe with the best forward in your county and in the country probably, and then Paddy Clifford, like, what a season he's had. It must be so demoralising just seeing them, and they obviously just do what they want. Like, the fact that they move Paddy Clifford into midfield, because in club football and at that level, and it's like you say, it really is more like an intermediate level, but still, you know, they're above that obviously.
Yeah.
So they bring him into midfield because they just need to get Paddy Clifford the ball, get his hands on the ball, he'll run all day and bring it forward. And they even bring, was David Clifford centre half forward?
Yeah,
than in the
centre forward, yeah.
Yeah, so even then, that was to bring him into the game more, you know, like, let's get our best players, get their hands on the ball and see what they can do. And they did okay.
Yeah, they definitely did. Well, like, I mean, even, like, okay, it's junior football, it's premier junior. And we'd say, okay, we're qualified and say, right, it's not junior like we know it, or that would be a junior A or junior B. It'd be more of an intermediate level. But even an intermediate centre-back, an intermediate centre-back at the end of the day has to mark David Clifford in a club game, and the midfielder has to mark Paddy. Like, I mean, how are they? I'd love to go down. Like, I mean, these fellas must be just running amok. I'd be nearly the manager coming into David after scoring 1-9, say, David, we need more out of you, mate.
Yeah. I mean, they must just concede it in their heads. It's like, okay, if you keep him to, maybe they told him, like, if you keep him to below 110 today, then you've done an excellent job and he can go away today, at least thinking, you know, that he's got some sort of a win, like in a moral sense. Because, like, you're not going to keep him that quiet. They're obviously going to try to get the ball to him. He's the key man. And it doesn't, even if they weren't trying to, he's going to get it himself. You know, I can only imagine that by and large, he does what he wants in them games. And we know we say that it's intermediate and stuff, but, like, when you're at his level, it's chalk and cheese, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We see East Kerry on TG Cahir in the other championship. Can we please see a Fossa junior game on TG Cahir sometime and get a look at this in action? Some poor number 6 trying to mark David Clifford at that level. Another bit of news here that I was looking at is the GAA are giving special briefings. I want to keep going on about this championship restructure that's coming up on the 22nd or the 23rd of October. Thinking of the October the 22nd or 23rd, I think it's the 23rd, that we're basically the new championship structure is going to be voted on. And considering Jim McGuinness had it so kind of wrong, and the way he, if Jim McGuinness wanted to sell, you know, his understanding of it to a Congress delegate, and I would go in and sell my version of it to another Congress delegate, mine would be the real version of it, they would have two completely different kind of versions of what we're actually dealing with here, you know. So I think the GEA have identified the fact that maybe there's people out there that don't fully understand what these, you know, different structures potentially could be and the advantages of them and why, you know, why they're even up for debate at all. I think they've spoken to Leinster and Connacht. They're speaking with they're speaking with Ulster as well ahead of the special Congress. But County Board, Tyrone County Board Chairman Michael Kerr, and this is understandable again, he says, when you look at it, there's no doubt that it's the most competitive of the provincial championships. He's obviously talking about the Ulster Championship. I think it's worth pointing out that the championship has served this province well for many, many years. So why would you want to do away with it? I think it's important that it's retained, as it's very much part of the province's GAA fabric. And the great news for you, Michael Kerr, is that this league-based championship does not get rid of the Ulster Championship at all. And this needs to be pointed out. You keep your Ulster Championship. The Ulster Council keeps control of the Ulster Championship. It's just pulled out from the All-Ireland series. So, like, I mean, when Michael Kerr says that, like, you wonder, does he understand what it is? You know, or maybe he's thinking of the other provincial structure which pulls counties from other provinces and is a total kind of mess, Lee. But if I was answering Michael Kerr, and I'm sure when the GEA give them the briefing, they'll explain to him, you keep your Ulster Championship. Nothing really changes in the whole structure of the season. It's just moved around a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I think they are right to give these briefings, because, like, the biggest mess about communication is the illusion that it's actually taken place, you know, and it's all well and good saying, oh, we have these proposals and there's changes and stuff. But if in counties are in any way unsure of what it is they're voting for, then they'll just stick to what they know because it's safer. You'll just revert to type and be like, no, don't change anything then, because the fear of it being worse is always outweighs, you know, what we've already got, because we're used to what we've already got. So, like, in terms of Tyrone, like, yeah, I mean, that provincial championship, it's so important, and it's important to Tyrone, and it means the world to, like, Tyrone supporters and Donegal supporters and things, you know, to win that. So highlighting how that it's actually staying is absolutely key to that. It might be played in, like, March or something. I suppose that'd be slightly a different situation. And see, people keep comparing it to the McKenna Cup or whatever else, and that's nearly doing it more damage. You've got to be careful with your words, because, like, we're not saying it is a McKenna Cup. You know, it's still the Ulster Championship.
Yeah.
It's knockout football, and there's the cup. You'll get your Ulster medal, and nothing will change in terms of its history, and that Tyrone won it in 2021 and say Donegal win it next year. Like, that's they're not the first team to win this new trophy. It's
no,
the same trophy.
It's the Ulster,
you know, that all
yeah.
has to be made. Yeah, exactly. As long as that's all underlying, made clear, then I don't really understand what the real issue can be. I understand that, like, winning Ulster, then that gets you your spot in your quarter final or your semi final, depending on the structure. But, like, and nowadays, with this new plan, that'll have no bearing on your semi final and stuff. But, I mean, I think that's a small sacrifice to make for the sake of the GAA as a whole and everyone getting more football and getting this league-based championship where you still go. Because it's still good momentum. If you've won that Ulster championship, I reckon you're going into that league championship campaign on pretty good form, you know, feeling really confident and up for it and ready. Like, I mean, it's definitely the best of a situation, but yeah, communication is absolutely vital.
It is. And, like, I mean, the idea that you would compare it to a McKenna Cup, which is played, like, in, you know, the very first week of January, just after Christmas, players aren't fit. You know, this will be in March after a full 6 weeks pre-season starting on January the 1st, and you're primed and ready to go. You know, this is an Ulster Championship. I think one thing they could have potentially done was the Ulster champions start the league-based championship with a point on the board. You know, and that point could be the difference between potentially qualifying for knockout and not, or potentially finishing first in the group and avoiding a preliminary quarter final, you know, or are going straight into the All-Ireland semi-finals or whatever way they're doing it, that would keep that prestige. And, you know, if some people are worried about that, that would be the answer and say, look, you want 1 point. We're not going, you don't even have to mess with scoring difference or head to heads. That 1 point could be the difference level on points, you know, to give teams more of a reason not to do what Jim McGuinness is worried about, and that is not taking the Ulster Championship as seriously as they would, even though I think they will anyways, because at the end of the day, like I said last week, you can only win two cups all year. You want to throw away the chance of winning one for the off chance that you might win the big one. You know, you want to win something during the year. So I do think, regardless of the extra point, I think teams are going to want to win their provincial championships. Like, why would they not? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, I think so as well. I think it'll be as important as ever. Like, if Cavan had done what they did last season, say next season in this new structure and stuff, I don't think anyone would be saying, oh, that's because of the new structure. They still went up against the same teams. They went up against, you know, with the same quality, and they performed all the things that they had to perform. I like that 1 point idea, because then there would be a connection at least between the two, and there is some benefit to it, and you get into the league based championship with some sort of advantage on the basis of it too. And not least, you know, the importance of winning a trophy, getting that under your belt. Roy Geller was talking about why they chose to play that league final. You know, they didn't have to play it, but he thought it was important that Derry got a trophy. They got to climb up and get their medals and play in a final based situation, you know, and get used to that. And he thought that would be really good preparation for the championship, you know, because there is importance to winning trophies and competing and getting good runs and stuff, especially before a championship. You want as much football as you can before a championship. And this is just another way of doing it. I do think once it's explained, if it's explained well, because you don't know who the GAA is going to do the explaining and which proposal they're really backing.
Because, yeah.
You know, there could be issues there in that regard. But if it's explained correctly, as you know, we're trying to do here, keeping that Ulster Championship, provincial championships in general, will all still be there. They just might not have the same connection to the league-based championship in the end. And then everyone gets more football at the end of it, and they play more competitive football as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't know until we really see it, and then we can say, see, this is what we mean. But yeah, an explanation and communication is by far the most important thing going forward.
Exactly. Send me around to individual county boards. I'll get this over the line. I'll sell this to them. Like, a very modest fee is all I'll charge to do this. Just, you know, very modest expenses fee. A bit like Mick O'Dwyer expenses. That's all I'd ask for. Anthony Daly has been talking about four points for a goal in hurling. Now, he's on the RTGA podcast. He says maybe you could bring that in. He's complicated a little bit now, Dalo has. He's saying that the first goal is worth 3, but any subsequent goals is worth 4. I don't know why I don't understand the logic or the basis of why he wants to say that without having any subsequent goal is worth 4 points after the first goal. He said it might be an interesting way for a team to push on and keep going for goals and keep trying to create goal chances. You look at the difference in soccer now when you get 3 points for a win. Previously it was 2. Like, that's you're not comparing the same thing. I don't think, like, teams are regularly scoring 30 plus points. Maybe some people say there's too many points, but I don't think this is the year to necessarily talk about this, because there was 71 goals scored in this year's championship compared to 29 last year, I was reading, which is just, you know, it's not necessarily the only thing you might argue for it. It's a little bit you wouldn't do it in Gaelic football, because I think teams would just avoid conceding goals at all costs, and we'd head back to a bloody, you know, a defensive game again, and that's not what we want. In hurling, maybe you want to see the ball in play a little bit more, and if a long range point is on, that you might try to work it through the lines a little bit and go for a goal. Dalo obviously knows a lot more than me about hurling. It's just, you don't often hear hurling people talking about ways to improve the game. So when I suppose you see, you know, one of the best hurling people in the country suggesting a change, you know, we should definitely be talking about it.
No, yeah. I'm wondering if that's the Limerick effect at all, because we've been talking a lot about so many changes, and even this championship structure and all, it keeps coming into debate because of Dublin's dominance in recent years when we talk about football. So I'm wondering now, just because of Limerick, and it's only 2, but they just look so unbeatable and stuff, maybe you need changes and teams need more hope. Because, like, at the end, then if you're down by 8 points, you're still only 2 scores away from equalising that, you know, which seems a bit crazy. But I don't know about going forward. Like, yeah, there's no like blanket defenses in football and stuff, but what he's trying to put forward is that, like, with the 4 points for a goal, is that there's more to gain, but then there's also more to lose as well. And then you could see the better teams really starting to open up and separate in these score lines if they start banging in goals for fun, because at the end of the day, like, the better team's going to score the most goals. Is it to give the underdog a chance? Like, what is it he's really trying to change, or what's he suggesting? Like, what is the best outcome with this solution?
I think the point they were making, that you score a goal, right? And I think this happened at the All-Ireland final. Shane Kingston scored a goal, and the next puck out went out, Limerick scored a point, and then Limerick had 2 points basically within the next minute to almost cancel out that goal. Points are flying over so fast. Now, I think, listen, just tell hurlers to mark their men and make it harder to score points from everywhere. There seems to be loose men all over the field, and they're just knocking it over from fierce distances. Like, I don't know, to be honest. I don't have a huge opinion of it, but it's definitely an interesting one. I'm sure that people will agree and disagree. I think the high scoring is coming because the game has gone very tactical, and I think that teams aren't tactically astute. I really do. I think that they're leaving players all over the field. You can score from your own half-back line. Why are you going to leave a man free if he can score? Mark your bloody man, you know? And that transition from dropping off a player and trying to free up a sweeper, I think that they need to improve how to do that and leave less players free all over the field. Like, I mean, whether the answer is to not fix that problem and try to fix it by increasing the points, you know, that you get for a goal, I'm not too sure, but definitely interesting to keep an eye on that. Colin Bonner, the new Tipperary manager, I think very interesting initial quote. He was on Sports Saturday or something like that, or maybe he was on yesterday. Usually, right, so we all know Colin Bonner's coming in, and Tipperary are at a little bit of a stage where, you know, they've had some good underage teams. Liam Sheedy didn't really use those young lads too much. You know, they've got some players who've won an awful lot, but, you know, are into their 30s, have a lot of mileage up. So obviously Colin Bonner could come in and say, look, you know, let's take it easy here, everybody. There's a big rebuilding job to do here. You know, we've a lot of young players. We have to mash them all together, and don't be expecting miracles straight away. That would be an interview I would have had predicted, you know, from most managers who are covering their backs, let's be honest, and he'd bring in loads of young players. But Colin Bonner didn't see that at all. He says, I don't see it that way. If I get the mix right and get a bounce, this could happen very quickly. That's what I believe, and that's why I'm here. I want to get the best out of these lads, not next year or the year after. I want to get it as quickly as I can. I feel we have the ability in that dressing room to do that. Like, I mean, isn't that it's fairly, you know, strong kind of, you know, quotes for someone who could easily hide behind, here, wait for year two now, lads. This is a, you know, a slow process. And, you know, no one would probably have blamed him if he did have come out with that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like, transition phases is another common term that they would throw in. Rebuilding and building and all this stuff, they're all just, you know, fancy cliche words. But I mean, like, if you're a new manager and you're coming in, like, you obviously took that job because you see something there that you believe in, and then you believe in yourself as well, that, like, I think I'm the man to do something with this team, and I can bring them forward. I'm wondering if that's sort of how he pitched it to the county board when they're going for the job, you know, that's maybe what he said, and he's just being completely transparent and obvious, or not, and honest, and then taking that to the media as well, and maybe that's the way to go forward, like, just wearing your heart in your sleeve, coming out and just saying it, like, I believe this is a great group, and we can achieve things, and your speed is of the essence. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'll fully expect fans, you know, to have a natural level of patience and things, and, you know, they'll not get the pitchforks out if things don't go well immediately. But, like, to me, if I was the fan of that, kind of, like, I'd be inspired by that. Like, I mean, that'd be really positive. I'd be like, oh, I can't wait for next season to see what he's going to do, because he obviously sees something that maybe isn't super obvious, or he knows something we don't, and let's get behind him. I think it's a great idea, and it's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, it definitely is. Another bit of news here before we move to Jack O'Connor, because obviously that was the big news of the weekend. Jack O'Connor has got the Kerry job. Is Muggsy, Owen Mulligan, has gone in with the Tyrone under 20s. So big movement, big appointment for the Tyrone under 20s. I saw somebody on Twitter, I thought I had to laugh at it. He says, what's he coming in as? The entertainment and social manager.
This could be the first time ever that the players put a drinking ban on the management team. No, listen, Muggsy, I remember reading Mulligan's book, and he talked about, like, how hard it was for him in 2013 when he didn't get back into the panel, or he didn't get the call from Mickey to join, and how he really struggled with his identity because he, like, you know, he's seen him. I am a Tyrone player. That's what I am, and that's what I do. Like, he really loves Tyrone. He loves playing for his county. Being a footballer was everything to him. Is everything to him. And then you look at it even pragmatically, you know, and he's got three All-Irelands, an All-Star. He was man of the match in that 2005 final. He scored maybe the best goal ever in Croke Park history. Like, how could he not be invaluable to young players coming through? And yeah. Then, like, obviously his reputation, you know, he's a bit of a joker and he's the crack. But maybe that's what they need. You know, if you have a really stern manager, he could be that approachable coach where you could go to him with your problems and stuff. And it's a nice blend. I reckon it's a good move for Tyrone. Like, you can't really go wrong bringing someone with that level of success into the background team.
Yeah, kind of legendary status that under-20s would just look at Muggsy and think, oh my God, it's Owen Mulligan. And I do agree with you. You need, the management team needs one of those fellas who's almost, he's almost acts like a captain in that he's very friendly with the players. And, you know, he's on that side. He'll drink with the players. I don't think any manager should really be drinking too much with the players. I think there should be a separation there with management teams at inter-county level. Obviously, get on well, but there comes a point at 11 o'clock, the manager needs to tip on now and not really, you know, I think there needs to be some kind of respect for the manager that he, you know, he isn't really in that crack, whereas Muggsy could be bringing him back to stories. That's kind of, he's your inside man.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's one of the boys. And I hope I'm not underselling him at all by saying any of that, but he does, he has that charisma and, you know, and that flair. You've seen it on the football pitch and you've seen it off the football pitch. You know, that's just the type of person he is. And even like his, he writes articles and stuff with Paddy Power and all. I mean, and they're all, like, they're good at analysis, and he's always funny with it, and he's always really honest as well. And he is a winner, bottom line. You know, he won't accept anyone not pulling their weight and not going to training. And here, he'll know every excuse in the book as well. He's definitely used them.
Yeah, no, he definitely will. It's one to watch out for. I think he'd be very good, definitely with the forwards anyways. Right, we'll leave it there, Lee, and we'll come back. We'll talk to Darren O'Sullivan about Jack O'Connor's appointment. So Jack O'Connor beat off stiff opposition to be reappointed for a third time as Kerry manager. And to chat a little bit about this, Darren O'Sullivan joins us on the line now. How's it going, Darren?
All good, Willie. How's it fine?
All good, all good. So how's this going on down in, how's this going down in the kingdom? Has it been received well?
To be honest, I'd say it's 50-50. I think a lot of people see it as a backward step. Personally, I don't. But I'm also aware that I might be a bit biased. Obviously, I had Jack for two stints, and one of them he made me captain, and we won All Ireland. So I probably am a bit biased. But for me, in the build-up to this, I actually genuinely felt that he was the only man to get the job once he picked a very good backroom team with him. Because for me, he is a manager. He's not going to try and coach the team. I'm hoping now what he'll do is he'll bring in a couple of very good buddies with him and they'll do the coaching and stuff. But for me, he was the only one, and like, he's a proven winner. I don't think Kerry can be going down the route of getting a manager and hoping in the next 2 or 3 years that they'll win All Ireland. I think, like, it's pushing on 8 years now, Nick, this season coming, and taking a chance on a fella, just, it's not good enough. They need to start winning. There's no point being there and thereabouts, and they've underachieved the last couple of years.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's a brilliant track record, Darren. Like, he's won two All-Irelands in his first year in 04 and 09. Well, 09 was when he came back, and he won one in 06 as well. Like, obviously, 09 was the year you were captain. Like, I mean, that's a good while ago. Like, the game has changed an awful lot since 2009.
Yeah, people keep saying that, but football's still the same. You look at it, most of it, when Dublin were at their pomp, it was only a year ago. But what did they do better than everyone else? They got around the field and they made less mistakes. Their basic skills were just better than everyone else. And under Jack, maybe it was basic football, I don't know, but I never once questioned my kicking ability. I never once questioned the pass. If I saw it, I kicked it. And that was the same for everyone. So for me, football, like, you've all these coaches now. For me, what's a coach? A fellow who throws out 150 cones and brings in this really complicated drill that confuses people, or what? Like, football's very simple. It's a simple game. If you can get around the field and your basic skills are better than the opposition, you'll win most games.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, what's the 50% that you're saying obviously are happy with it and it's split? What are the people who aren't happy with it saying?
Well, I think that, like, just through Twitter, I think I put it out, and it was a personal opinion. I genuinely felt that if they were to get a new manager, Jack was the only one for, due to his experience. He would know a lot of these younger lads through his experience with the minors and the 20s last couple of years. And he is a winner. Jack is the type of character, I don't think he cares if you like him or not. And you kind of need that. He's not going to beat around the bush. He's going to be straight. And the one thing he always had in the panels, he had a couple of fellas who maybe weren't the greatest footballers in the world, but they made it tough here. And I think that's what Kerry are lacking, maybe a couple of personalities, a couple of fellas who aren't beautiful footballers, you know, but they have that rough edge around them. So, look, a lot of people are obviously going to think a backward step. It's gone back in time, I suppose. He's brought Darren Murphy back in with him, and they'll say, oh, he was there with him before. He's bringing Mike Quirk in, who was obviously part of a number of Jack's panels that are thinking, oh, it's going back in time. But I suppose only if you do go back in time, Kerry were winning back then, so there's no reason why they can't do it again with him.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know as well as I do, there's a bit of a snobbishness down around Kerry. Like, I mean, Jack needs some bit of star quality in there. Now, we know he was after Donaghy, and Donaghy, I don't think, could do it with his commitment to Armagh. He needs the Gooch. He needs someone for Sean O'Shea and David Clifford to look at and go, who's going to tell us how to improve? Is Mike Quirk, I don't think like this, but like, I know Kerry, people in Kerry do. Mike Quirk was a sub on those Kerry teams. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, is there that kind of attitude there? Who's the bit of star quality that he... Like, I'm looking at the other ticket. You know, the Seamus Moynihan, a legend. Donny Buckley, very, very well regarded as a coach. Darrow Canada, a legend. You know, Stephen Stack as the manager. Then you have Joe O'Connor as the physical fitness, who's won All-Irelands with Clare and Limerick. And Aidan O'Matney. You know, the other ticket looked stronger, Darren. Like, would that be fair?
It definitely looks stronger, but I don't think it was all confirmed. I don't know, was that all leaked? I don't know as well, is the big thing here.
No, they interviewed. I know that. I know the other ticket actually did a presentation.
I know one name knew he was part of the ticket but had no conversation.
Right.
So that's why I have a few doubts about it. But the other thing is, I know it's all appealing and stuff like that, but you just don't know how these fellas, like, being an inter-county manager now, not that I know, but I've been a player not too long ago, it's everything. Like, it's, you can't be beaten around the bush. You can't have other commitments. You can't go from not being involved in a county team to all of a sudden being in there. It's full on. For me, the county, if I was picking a county manager at the moment who's done it best over the last number of years, Liam Sheedy stands out to me because of the people he brought in with him.
Yeah.
You know, bringing in someone like Eamon O'Shea, who was the manager before him, was for me just a masterstroke. He knew he was a great coach. There was no ego. He was bringing in better people around him. And that's what I'm hoping Jack will do. But I do get what you're saying. But Kerry had that last year with Morris. I'm not sure. Like, for me, if Morris came into my house now and told me to do something, I'd probably do it. I don't know, do younger fellas have that same respect? Isn't the word, but I don't know what the word is for it, but I don't know, do they react the same way that maybe your generation, even my generation, would to some of the older players? But for me, if I was going into a Kerry dressing room and I had a Declan or Sullivan who's involved with the 20s, or Gooch or Donny or whoever it is, or Galvin maybe, telling me to, I go through walls for these boys. I was in dressing rooms with him. Seamus Moynihan's like the god. Like, he was amazing. So maybe Jack has to get on to a few fellas like that, because I do get what you're saying. Certain fellas can say something and it won't register, but if it comes from a different voice, somebody with that status, it will obviously hit a chord.
Yeah, he must be very well respected in the Kerry County Board to get that job ahead of that other ticket and ahead of Peter Keane, who reapplied. And he pretty much only has a half a backroom team so far. Like, he has nothing confirmed. Everything's up in the air, really, with Jack. He has Dermot Murphy and Mike Quirk. They're the only two that have been confirmed. So he pretty much got the job on his own reputation, you'd imagine.
Yeah, I think, look, for me, that's what he's getting it on. He's getting it on his own reputation. Jack is a football man. And for me, he's a winner. Do you know, it literally comes down to that. I think Jack has guaranteed them. I think he's gone in there and said, you can throw all these fancy teams at you or whatever, but he's a winner. He has his way of doing things. Like I said, he doesn't care if they like him or not. He'll go in. I think he'll get results. I do. And like, if someone told me to write down exactly why, it's one of them ones. There are certain fellas who are just built for it. They don't care what people say. Do they like him or not like him? They get results. They don't even, I'd say Jack doesn't even mind if the players don't like him, but they'll get results.
Yeah.
And that's what he is. And there's nothing there. Like, he's not the appointment they all wanted. I suppose we all wanted, you wanted Tomás O'Shea stepping in, or Declan Sullivan stepping up from in the 20s. And, you know, it's the kind of fairy tale, this former star player. But it doesn't work like that all the time. And I do think the likes of Declan or Tomás will come in time. But they need an experience at that level, being in the dressing room as a selector or whatever first, because the intercounty game has just gone to a new level. Like, it's more than just knowing the game of football. It's more than having a couple of good drills. It's all logistics. It's planning. It's, for me, like, the manager is probably the least important. It's about getting the right team around you. I think Kerry have missed a trick over the last couple of years by, like, I was never into sports psychology or anything like that, but I definitely think in the last couple of years, Kerry, by not getting somebody, they're missing out on something, because they're getting to positions where they should be winning games and they're not. I'm hoping, and Jack was the first fella to bring in sports psychologists with Kerry. And this is going back 15 odd years ago, back in a time when we used to laugh at sports psychology and all that stuff. We didn't buy into it. But I do think he'll go down that route again. He'll get the right people in. He's built up enough connections through the years to get some very, very good people in with him.
Yeah, I still don't buy into it. I was making fun of it here only last week about the stuff written on the players' wrists.
I know, I don't buy into that. But genuinely, like, and something like, you know, I was in dressing rooms where that book from the All Blacks Legacy was floating around, and geez, you'd be having a team talk, next thing you'd hear a quote come from one of the boys, and it was straight out of the book. But my thing is, like, it is something that you look at. But it's not even just the gimmicky stuff. It's small things, I think, in a dressing room, like a selector that isn't stuck to the management team, that just walks around and actually talks to the players and can say, oh, geez, Woolley's not himself the last 2 weeks. He might have something going on outside of football that's bothering.
That stuff, yeah.
That's the stuff that I think Kerry have been missing. Somebody that's, geez, that Woolley feels comfortable coming up and saying, geez, I'm after struggling with a job, or the girlfriend's giving me the boot, or whatever it is. Do you know, something small, might be small to someone, but it drags on. And then my thing is, with football, if you're fit and you're happy, more often than not, your form is going to be good. Do you know, everything else after that is easy.
Yeah, Caroline Coura does that with Limerick. Like, I mean, she kind of, you know, you can go to her, maybe you don't want the manager to know that you're, you know, you're not happy with something or whatever, that she's kind of a person that you can go and talk to. One other person that's name keeps popping up, Darren, it's a bit of a head scratcher for me, is Paddy Talley. So apparently, the feedback, from my information, from my few sources down in Kerry, is that the players wanted better coaching. That was some feedback that they got from players. Now, you know, sometimes players get confused with coaching. Like, there's the coach that goes out, like you mentioned, and does all the drills and has all the bollards, and they'll, you know, they'll make training a little bit interesting and interactive, and you like that. And then there's the coach that says, this is how we're going to play, this is what I want you to do, and can individually coach players to be better, and collectively coach them into the way they want to play and defend and all these things. And, you know, when I look at Kerry, and they're kind of going down the road of wanting to pretty much stand their men up and defend man on man, they're not great at it, they're not one of the better teams at it. Paddy Talley is well known as a defensive coach by bringing back two or three players to help out your six defenders. And I'm kind of wondering how he fits in with Kerry, because, right, say he says to Jack O'Connor, right, I can do that, I can coach players individually to defend, you know, the six backs, and maybe tell the wing back to drop off his man and maybe him cover as a sweeper or do whatever like that. But he's unproven as that. He doesn't have much experience at intercounty level doing that. All his experience is in a defensive plan that I can't imagine Jack O'Connor wants to go to that defensive plan that maybe Peter Keane flirted with in his second year.
Yeah, like, to be honest, like, I wouldn't know a whole pile about him, and anything I've heard hasn't been great. No, to be honest, it's mostly negative. It, you know, like that, it's going down the defensive route. But that is the area Kerry need to shore up. No, to be fair, against Tyrone, when they got beaten, I actually thought their backs did okay for long periods of that game. But I think what Jack was probably most impressed with with Tyrone is their ability for their half forwards and half backs just to interchange. Like, you wouldn't know if a fella's wing forward or wing back. And I think that's what Jack probably wants to bring, that fluidity, that if you're a wing back, 1 minute you could be wing forward for the next kick out, and that bit of a ebb and flow between the two lines. Look, I'm not for all that defensive systems. As a forward, you'd know it yourself. The less instructions I got, the better I was. I go out and play the game, and that's the way it was. But they do have to change what they're doing because it's not working. We talk about all the great forwards we have in Kerry. But if you go back last year, we missed, how many opportunities did we butcher against Tyrone the year before? We left numerous chances below in Cork and got beaten. So, you know, defensive systems are great, but we need something that's going to make sure that forwards aren't, because the two games that stand out, the defeat to Tyrone and the defeat to Cork the year before, it was down to the forwards, not down to the backs, it was down to the forwards. So I can understand him wanting to get a different perspective. Maybe it's a case of he'd know the Tyrone way of playing, and the only team Jack doesn't have a great record against is probably Tyrone. So maybe that's kind of where he's going. But like that, I don't think, like, it's all about winning. When you're losing, all the excuses come out. We need this, we need that. But like, and I'm blue, and it's not like I'm old school. I'm definitely not old school, but football hasn't changed that much.
Yeah, and maybe it's going. It's going a bit back towards. I always thought what one of the Kerry strengths were is their half forward line could all score. So like, it was an added, you know, bonus for Kerry, where a lot of other teams, you know, there was a big disconnect between their full forward line and they were carrying a lot of ball, that Kerry would try and leave their half forward line in position a bit, and that gave them that little bit of an edge to be able to move it up through the lines and stuff, you know. So I suppose if you start, I don't know, like, I mean, this is for Jack O'Connor to start thinking of, but then if Kerry start putting, you know, half forwards that'll work harder but can't really score, are they going back a step or two?
Yeah, well, like, I suppose it's a prime example for biting a two wing forwards. I played with Galvin would be one, and Dunica was another. They were never going to kick 1, 5, or 6 in a game, and they'd do all the donkey work. They'd go in the backs, they'd be linking play, they'd be getting breaks, they'd be stuck and everything. They'd always chip in with a couple of points.
Yeah.
But what they were as well was they were footballers. Like, their first instinct was head up, is there a pass on? It wasn't about running every ball. It was. And that's what I'm going back to with Jack. We used to, like, I remember going to a different club one time when I was at the bank and doing a training session with him. And your man comes up and he goes, you must do more complicated stuff than this. And I was like, no, literally, this is what we do in training. And he was, no, you must do more for championship. And I was like, no, it's about getting your basics right, that your first instinct is kicking. It's just about building understanding then with players. And I don't think Kerry have that understanding in the forwards. Don't know why that is. I don't know if a half forward gets it, is he going to run with it? Is he going to go solo across the field? Is he going to kick it? With Jack, as a forward unit, we always had that understanding. Even a case of if I was out the field and went for a run in for goal or whatever, you'd be gassed after it. And I wouldn't even have to look up. I'd have one of the boys would be gone out into my position and I just walk into theirs. And it's all about understanding, and it's about kicking and knowing where the next fella is going to go. And that is, it's no coach in the world is going to teach you that. I remember Keane O'Neill, and I got on fine with Keane. I remember him trying to explain to us, if Gooch goes there, you go there, and Declan goes there. And I was looking around this boxy thing going, what is he talking about? You don't have that time to be thinking in a match. You just go on instinct,
yeah,
and understanding. And I think that's what Jack does. He doesn't overcomplicate it. He is what he is. Like, but he's not going to try and redefine the wheel. I think everyone's trying to come up with some new, complicated, fancy way of doing it. And I keep going back to football. Simple. You get around, you get fit, you get to a level of fitness, and then it's about being basic skills. You don't give away the ball, you won't concede.
Yeah, don't run into blind alleys. I suppose that's the kind of one lesson that they come out of the Tyrone game.
Yeah, but that's it. Like that was the thing. Like, it was one of the reasons why I think the current manager or the old management team probably didn't get it. It was because, like, water breaks. I don't agree with the water breaks anymore, but they're brilliant for finding out what's going wrong and changing your game plan. Kerry never did in that Tyrone game. Kept making the same mistake. The only thing is, look, they made enough chances in that game to win two games and took the wrong decisions. So I think Peter Keane was always going to be under pressure there. As far as I know, he was asked to change his backroom team and he wouldn't, which you'd have to give him credit for. He wanted to stick with the team that he had, and he felt that he had a good enough team to bring Kerry into an All-Ireland final and win it, hopefully, but wasn't to be. But for me, like, obviously, Jack now has Quirky. He has Dermot Murphy with him. But he needs, as you said, he needs a couple of big names with him now just to bring a bit of excitement back. As a player, would you be too excited going back at the moment? Probably not.
Yeah, Jack has a bit of star quality. Dearman Murphy wouldn't have star quality, but could be very good in the background. You know, Quirk is unproven. You know, would you probably have better reports from John Sugrue in Leash than you would from Mike Quirk. You know, Mike Quirk seems to be higher rated than John Sugrue. Maybe, you know, he does some coaching podcasts and, you know, I saw him described as a deep thinker of the game, you know, whereas John Sugrue wouldn't be selling himself, you know, in that kind of a way. So maybe he's able to sell himself that better than Sugrue, but definitely Sugrue would be higher thought of in Leash after managing him than maybe Mike Quirk. It's definitely an interesting one. You mentioned Paul Galvin and Aidan O'Matney. The big change in 2004, obviously, Darren, was Aidan O'Matney and Paul Galvin come in. Combative players, brilliant players. Like, are there some hard as nails type players in Kerry football that haven't been tried yet? Like, I mean, are they there? And you know, because we know Kerry are a great footballing team, and you mentioned maybe they need that little bit of steel, and they need a centre back badly.
Yeah, look, I think we're lacking in a few areas, but my thing is always, you're never going to replace like for like. You don't. Paul's gone a long time now. You're not going to replace a Paul Galvin with somebody who's very similar. But they have to go back to that. For me, look, I don't know where Paul is based in Dublin or Mayo at the moment, but he's the type of fella who, if I was Jack, I'd be trying to get in, because Paul had all the skills in the world. Paul could be your playmaker.
Yeah.
But he sacrificed that part of his game because he knew there was other fellas who could do that, but they couldn't do what he could do. I don't know, are fellas doing that? Are they all want to play their own game? I think everybody now, you'd see it at club level as well, everyone wants to keep 3 or 4 points from play. Nobody wants to be the one scrapping around the floor, getting the breaks and just passing it off to a different player and leaving him get the limelight. A lot of it is you just have to sacrifice. And that's exactly what Jack did then. Like, he brought in Aidan O'Matney, who was spiky. He brought in Galvin, who was spiky. And they complemented the more, I suppose, flair players around them. They sacrificed parts of their game because they knew their role in the team was valuable. So that'll be the big thing for Jack. There's plenty of flares around the county. My big thing is find a couple of defenders who aren't very good footballers. Find a couple of defenders who literally get a nosebleed when they get past the halfway line. Do you know that they don't want to go forward? They want to, like Tom Sullivan there from Rathmore, one of the best cornerbacks ever. I don't know how many, you'd probably count the amount of scores he got on one hand in all the years he played for Kerry. Mark O'Shea was one of the best defenders in the country and developed the attacking side after he had the man nailed down. At the moment, I feel that fellas are being picked because they're very good footballers, they're brilliant going forward. But you need, if your job, if you're a defender, if you're one of the fellas from number 2 to number 7, your first job is to be a defender, be a pest, be a nightmare, be standing on a fella's toes and smiling at him at the same time. You go into training there and you could name them all out. They'd be banging off you, standing on your toes, hopping off you, but they'd be smiling away at you. You'd be going, what's this fella's game here? And that's only in training. I don't think we have them type of fellas anymore. So maybe you have to go away from the lovely footballer and the great footballer and go with the fellas who are just want to be there to nullify their man, take their man out of the game and be a pest. Be a nuisance.
Yeah, just love defending. That's the kind of, so like, I mean, what, just to finish up, Darren, like, I mean, he needs an All-Ireland in his first year. Like, there's talk of 2 years and stuff, but he needs to win the All-Ireland now, right? Because, like, I mean,
that's true, and I think that's why he got the job. I think if you like that, you had that, I suppose we call it a dream team, Stephen Stack had, but there was pressure on that, and I just think with Jack, like, you know what you're going to get with Jack. There's, like, you can name out all these former players that you don't know what they're like as coaches. And like you said about all the podcasts and whatever, anyone can talk a good game. Do you know, you could be a great writer and be writing for a paper. You could have the podcast and be talking about this. It's a different kettle of fish when you're coaching fellas and you need them to trust you and buy into what you say. And look, obviously, I think getting this, the star name in that players will list to is important, but it's about getting fellas there who are tuned into it, that aren't just throwing out the cliches and
yeah.
can see the game, that sometimes it's not all about the beautiful game. It's not all about doing things that, I suppose, like that, the sport just want to see. Sometimes it's about, and at the moment for me, for Kerry, it's just about winning. It doesn't matter how ugly it is, it's about winning. Because we've been saying, oh, every year it's all Dublin are favourites, Kerry are the next best and all this stuff, but Kerry haven't been the next best for quite a while. You know, it's been Mayo, now it's been Tyrone. I think probably where Peter Keane probably fell down was, I think he overachieved in his first year, and expectation obviously went up, and they didn't perform after that. So for me, it is a case of Jack. I don't know what he got, maybe 2 years, but I think they'll be expecting All-Ireland in the first year.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. Keep an eye out for that. Darren, thanks very much for taking the call.
Cheers, Willie.
Yeah, great stuff from Darren there. It's interesting to see how that'll go, Lee. Like, I mean, half a backroom team. For me, the other ticket looks stronger, much stronger. Moynihan, Stack as the manager. Stack has a lot of experience managing a club. You have Moynihan, you have Darrow Kennedy, you have Donny Buckley, who's a big, big one. You have Joe Connor doing the physical fitness, and there was talk of Aidan O'Mahony doing the strength and conditioning. For me, on paper, that looks like a stronger ticket than the Jack O'Connor one. And it's interesting that Darren has said, like, it's not a universally kind of, you know, approved appointment, which probably isn't the best start. It's a weird one. He's won three bloody All-Irelands with them.
Yeah, it is a strange one, all right. See, the thing is, people don't have a lot of patience for someone you've already lost patience with, you know, and obviously he's left the position before because there was maybe a lack of belief. Was it 2012?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I honestly always believed that Jack O'Connor was going to get this job. As soon as Kerry announced that statement, I retweeted it and said why the statement was wrong, because they didn't even thank Peter Keane and stuff, and it was very weird. But they said Jack O'Connor will be in for the job, because just that whole thing of him going on to the podcast, talking about, you know, always wanting to be a Kerry manager, the allure will always be there. And this is all while he's still the Kildare manager. And then like a week later, he leaves. And then 2 weeks after that, Peter Keane, or they say they're going to be looking for a new manager. And I don't know, it all just smelled of like Jack knew something we didn't know. And I think Darren was right. You know, it was all about like, if he could come in with a strong enough backroom team, then he was always going to be the favourite. And he's obviously convinced them that he's got just that.
Yeah, it was the Examiner podcast he was talking on when he said that. That was the morning after Tomás O'Shea had his say on Peter Keane, and Peter Keane kind of was out of the mix. Listen, all the drama's over now anyway. He has the job. It'll be interesting to see who he gets in. And as we know, like, patience is very, very thin down in Kerry. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on like 12 years after winning his last All-Ireland. So listen, we'll leave it there, Lee. That's all we've time for. We'll be back on Thursday, as usual, and we'll look ahead to the weekend's club action and any other news that's going on. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
No, really. Yeah, I might have been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone has that one goal, that thing they want to prove. Not to other people, but to themselves. Then right when you think you could actually do it, cancer. And that goal, is still within reach. I would know. I'm about to run my first ever marathon with my two best friends. 3 years after having cancer.
At least we look good in these shorts.
Woo! Let's get it, guys. You, keep making plans.
Visit OhioHealth.com/keepmakingplans to learn more.